President Trump is dialing back his threats against Chicago after an explosive post on social media over the weekend that many interpreted as a plan to wage war on the city.
The president has vowed to step up immigration raids and send the National Guard to a number of American cities led by Democrats.
NPR's Kat Lonsdorf is in Chicago. Kat, you've been there for the past few days. What happened over the weekend?
Yeah, so on Saturday, Trump posted this pretty remarkable meme on social media you just referred to. It's an AI image of him as a character from the 1979 Vietnam War film Apocalypse Now. And it shows Chicago burning with helicopters flying overhead. And it says, "Chicago about to find out why it's called the Department of War." He's referring there to his rebranding of the Department of Defense last week. And that got a lot of attention, especially from elected officials here. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker responded by posting, quote, "The President of the United States is threatening to go to war with an American city. This is not a joke. This is not normal." But then on Sunday, Trump was asked by a reporter if he was threatening war with Chicago. And here's how he responded.
"We're not going to war. We're going to clean up our city. We're going to clean them up so they don't kill five people every weekend. That's not war. That's common sense."
Data shows that violent crime is down in Chicago in recent years, but Trump maintains that the National Guard would be sent here and to other cities to fight crime. He's also threatened to step up immigration arrests and deportations.
All right, so that's the view from D.C. How are people feeling in Chicago?
People are still going about their daily lives, but it is tense. On Saturday, there was a big protest downtown with marchers taking up whole streets for blocks. I talked to people there, and they told me that they were really worried about American democracy, especially after they've seen Trump deploy National Guard troops in both L.A. and D.C. in recent months. On the immigration side of things, people are genuinely scared. I went to Pilsen. It's a neighborhood where many people with Mexican roots live on the west side. I talked to 27-year-old Andrea Soria there. She teared up a bit, telling me about several undocumented members of her family who haven't left their houses this week.
"For them to not be able to go out, and all this week they've been relying on myself, you know, go get groceries, go check on this."
And she said it's been really stressful.
Now, Trump has said he will send the National Guard, Kat. He just hasn't said when or where. Wasn't there a ruling last week, if I remember right, saying that Trump's deployment of troops to Los Angeles this summer was illegal?
Yeah, you're right. That judge found that Trump's use of the National Guard violated a law that limits the use of the military for domestic law enforcement. But that ruling, which the Trump administration has appealed, only applies in California. In D.C., where the National Guard has been deployed for about a month, Trump has the authority to do so because of how enmeshed the federal government is with D.C. In most cases, governors deploy their state National Guards. You know, many experts say that what we're seeing here, with it being potentially forced on states, is uncharted territory.
Okay, so what are you going to be watching for in the coming days?
Well, we still really don't know what Trump's going to do. Remember, Trump has threatened multiple cities. Yesterday evening, he left things open, saying he would make a decision about where to send federal troops and agents, quote, over the next day or two. When asked specifically if he has plans for Chicago this week, he said, no, not really.
All right, that's NPR's Kat Lonsdorf in Chicago. Kat, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
In Florida, jury selection begins today in the trial of the man charged with attempting to assassinate Donald Trump last year when he was running for president.
A Secret Service agent says he spotted Ryan Ruth holding a rifle and fired on the suspect while Trump was golfing at his West Palm Beach club last September. Ruth will represent himself in court. The judge hearing the case granted Ruth's request to dismiss his lawyers.
NPR's Greg Allen will be in the courtroom today. He joins us from Fort Pierce, Florida. So, Greg, why did Ruth decide he wanted to represent himself?
Well, you know, we had a series of pretrial hearings over the last several months, and in the last several, Ruth told Judge Eileen Cannon he was dissatisfied with his attorneys. Because he couldn't hire his own lawyers, he was assigned two federal public defenders. But over the course of several months, he'd said, told the judge he didn't like how they were representing him. In a letter to the judge, he said they were a million miles apart, that's a quote, and were refusing to answer his questions. Judge Eileen Cannon, who's hearing the case, held a couple of hearings and considered an evaluation of Ruth's competency that was done by a forensic psychologist. She agreed Ruth could represent himself, but denied a request from his public defenders that they be released from the trial. Instead, she says they'll serve as standby counsel, helping him with court filings and other legal assistance when needed.
Okay, so remind us, what is Ruth charged with and what penalties could he face?
Right. Well, to recap, in September of last year, a Secret Service agent who was part of Trump's security detail says he saw a gun barrel poking from the tree line a few holes ahead of where the then presidential candidate was golfing. He immediately fired on the person holding the gun. A man later identified as Ruth fled the scene and was arrested a short time later driving north on Interstate 95. The main count he faces is attempted assassination of a major presidential candidate. A conviction on that charge would carry a maximum penalty of life in prison. There are four other counts, including some federal weapons charges, and Ruth has pleaded not guilty to all the charges.
All right, tell us about Ryan Ruth, and tell us about maybe how he'll conduct his defense.
Well, you know, he spent most of his life in North Carolina before moving to Hawaii. He has a criminal record, including a conviction in 2002 for possessing an explosive device. He's apparently held a lot of different political views in his time, supporting people like Bernie Sanders, Tulsi Gabbard, and then Donald Trump. He's been a strong supporter of Ukraine. He traveled there and was photographed and interviewed while there. He said he supported Trump for president in 2016 and now regrets that decision. A key piece of evidence in the trial, I think, will be this 12-page letter he left with a friend that was turned over to authorities after his arrest. Prosecutors plan to show just the first page of the letter to the jury. That's where he writes, "Dear world, this is an assassination attempt on Donald Trump, but I failed you." Ruth wants the jury to see the full text of the 12-page letter. He said in a motion to the judge that, quote, "every line is about gentleness, peacefulness, and nonviolent caring for humanity." Judge Cannon says she'll wait until later to rule on that request.
And speaking of Judge Cannon, she had another high-profile case not that long ago. That was Donald Trump's criminal trial on charges that he mishandled classified and top-secret documents.
Right. We heard a lot about Judge Eileen Cannon over the last couple years. She was appointed to the federal bench by Trump in 2020. In that classified documents case, she dismissed the charges against Trump, ruling that the appointment of a special counsel to prosecute the former president was unconstitutional. She was randomly assigned to hear this case.
All right, that's NPR's Greg Allen in Fort Pierce, Florida. Greg, thanks.
You're welcome.
Over the weekend, Ukraine says Russia launched its largest airstrikes yet on Ukrainian cities using more than 800 attack drones.
At least 5 people were killed and dozens were injured. And for the first time, a building in the heavily protected government sector was badly damaged. The attack comes as appeals from the Trump administration have failed to push Russia into ending its war on Ukraine.
NPR's Joanna Kakissis is on the live from Kyiv. Joanna, tell us about this weekend's attacks.
Yeah, actually, I had just gotten back into town when these attacks began on Saturday evening. I woke up in the middle of the night after I heard a very loud and familiar buzzing sound. That's a Shahed drone flying over our neighborhood, and then the booms of air defense trying to shoot down the drones as well as missiles. By early Sunday morning, smoke was billowing from the government sector, which is protected by layers of air defense. The building where President Volodymyr Zelensky's cabinet meets was on fire.
Yeah, and this is a heavily guarded sector of Kyiv. Mm-hmm. I mean, is this the first time a building in that area has been damaged in an attack?
Yes, hey, it's the first time since the beginning of Russia's full-scale invasion in February 2022. Now, according to Kyiv Mayor Vitaly Klitschko, the fire appears to have started after burning debris from a destroyed Russian drone fell on the building. And later on Sunday, Yulia Svitenko, she's Ukraine's prime minister, she posted a video to social media of herself walking past the broken walls of the damaged building. Here's a bit of that clip. Now she's saying you can see the consequences of this attack. We've put out the fires, our rescue crews are still working, and it looks like Russia is not seeking peace and is not ready for negotiations. Svitenko went on to say that she hopes Ukraine's allies will respond.
Oh, have they responded?
Well, yeah, they have, at least verbally. Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission president, said the Kremlin is mocking diplomacy, trampling on international law, and killing indiscriminately because among those killed in Ukraine was a mother and her infant son in Kyiv. However, the European Union is not entirely united in how to respond to Russian attacks. Hungary and Slovakia, for example, rely on Russian oil and economic ties, and its populist leaders often attack NATO and even the EU leadership as elitists. But von der Leyen said the EU is tightening sanctions on Russia and is helping Ukraine financially and with its military.
Okay. What did President Trump have to say about this?
Well, President Trump told reporters in Washington on Sunday that he is considering new sanctions in response to Russia rebuffing a ceasefire. However, the 50% tariffs the Trump administration imposed on countries like India for buying Russian oil appear to have had no real impact. Speaking to NBC News on Sunday, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent suggested that the U.S. is open to partnering with the European Union to impose even more sanctions on countries that buy Russian oil. This would be an attempt to, quote, collapse the Russian economy, as he said, though, of course, that would take quite a while.
So it looks like Russia is able to resist the effects of sanctions. So is Ukraine preparing for an extended war?
Yeah, well, they're preparing by arming themselves. President Zelensky said a couple of days ago that Ukraine now produces more than 60% of its own weapons. And in his evening address last night, Zelensky said Ukraine is fighting what he called air raid anxiety by making air defense a top priority because, according to Ukraine's military intelligence, Russia is producing nearly 3,000 Shahed attack drones every month. And that's a sign that the attacks will continue.
That's NPR's Joanna Kakissis in Kyiv. Joanna, thanks.
You're welcome.